put together a report. If you don't want to report to answer any more questions about
then we have the members to get an opportunity last week to submit questions. Those two, is that right? We submitted as they were, right? The session and ministers and myself. Not for me to be receiving letters about all of you. You've done all of that, right? Okay. Then that said, those are all the questions we have. And so we're going to start with your response to the questions. And then the deputy minister will say what he has to follow up the club. And then we can let you go.
Thank you, right. Over to you. We know anybody, so only to read with yourself. When the GPA comes in, you remind us who you are. But the rest of you will mention to the interior. Okay, over there to you, sir.
We're getting to questions for you.
And you all have a case for this
on you on Friday.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The first question was on the governance parts of the DIC and more or less how decisions are made. And in the document from page 5, we detail the PIC governance structure. First, the background about the PIC, the PIC Act, and the regulatory environment. I think we spoke about this at length last time in the presentation. It's all covered there. The most important thing is that PIC is also regulated by the Financial Services Board. And its function is to manage assets of GPF and other state funds and it receives the money from the GPF, which specifies the asset classes as I said and parameters within which we should implement the mandate. We have the board, which is chaired by the deputy, and the board has got these committees reflecting the PIC core business, which is investment management. The investment committee is a key component of that. It's got its subcommittees that deal with specific sectors, from listed to unlisted properties. I'm talking to page 14 now. And most importantly, there are statutory committees as well, which is the audit committee, as well as the social and ethics committee that deals with matters of ethics and others. I think it's very important to point out that the investment process within the PIC is very robust. And most importantly, that the board has been strengthened with additional five members. We've attached high-level resumes of each one of them in the document. So this has given PIC a valuable capacity to do investments much better, to deal with investment risk as well as operational risk of the organization. In line with King 3, we've established the IT governance committee as well, which is subcommittee of the contact of the IT and related issues. Another most important committee is the human resources. Because the PIC is about people, this one deals with the human management capital, making sure that we keep our efforts safe and invested so we continue to generate nice ideas around investments. And then we have ESCO as well, the executive committee which operates under the delegation of authority of the boss. It's got certain functions that we can perform without going to the board through that delegation. But in terms of investment, most of the approvals go through the subcommittees that I've mentioned before. Three committees that deal with unlisted investments, which is properties committee, the infrastructure committee, as well as private equity and the priority sectors, and then we have the main investment committee. So that's more or less the structure of the PIC. And on 19, showed you ESCO, executive committee that is responsible for day-to-day operations of the PIC. The most important thing on this 20, that's when we talk about how we do investments, the investment process. which, as I said, starts with money for the clients. The clients providing us rentals. We ensure that all client money is approved by the financial services board. And then we implement formulating policies, investment policy, etc. so that we are able to fulfill our clients' requirements. We detailed the transaction and approval process from page 21, which in a nutshell starts with the full management committee, which is a management committee that will see through investment and ideas. And then from there, due diligence get done, and then we then present this to IC or subcommittee of the investment committee to approve. On 22, we show you the whole transaction process from the executive committee to board of committees to board if there is a need, and most importantly, to even GPM if the exposure is too big. That covers the investment process as well, the governance of the PSC. If I can pause there for the honorable members.
I want to ask members, do you want to go through all the questions and come back to each of these, each set of questions that are interlinked and deal with them separately? What is the feeling of members?
Okay, that's fine. And then on part two, we detail the PIC achievements, what we have done, most importantly, comparing ourselves with our peers. The GPM has independently conducted the peer review mechanism for the PIC, benchmarking the markets, top funds, internationally. The benchmarking, the pool of investment of asset managers comprised of almost 330 funds within the database of the benchmarking company. 172 US funds, 85 Canadian, 63 European, 10 Asian, and 2 Gulf region funds. And if you look at the performance, the return was respectable, putting the GPM portfolio above the global median. 5-year equity average, also above the global median. Fixed income, the same story, and so on and so forth. So we compare quite well with the top funds out there in terms of performance. This was the question that was asked as to how we're doing relative to the peers. And locally, we've also done similar work without going through the numbers. I mean, without mentioning it, I can tell you that the PIC, in terms of asset under management, at 1.8 trillion, is almost three times the top fund managers in terms of size. If you relate to performance on the in terms of performance, we divided excess return of negative 11 basis points in the last 36 months, if you look at it. The next fund did 12 basis points positive, the other one did 2 basis points positive number, and the one that did minus 262 basis points, that's 2.62% versus minus 11 basis points. There's one that did minus 79, another one did minus 3.5. So that tells you that we're doing fairly well relative to the peers as well. We can make this page available to the honorable members as well. We're not only dividing on investment returns for our clients, we also play a critical role in transformation, economic transformation. And also job creation. We are partnered with some of the different companies with the different strategies of how we're going to do it. For example, we are in the process of partnering with the AB InBev once the team with SAP is concluded to put together a modern field and farm to stimulate agriculture. That way it's in progress. In the listed FG, for example, we transform the protein facility, driving transformation there, and we have almost allocated more than 50% of our programs to BE firms, BE brokerage firms. In that way, making a good impact in their operations in terms of sustainability, as well as ability to hire black professionals and also to create a very good platform for graduates to train at these companies. In the past 2 years, we've had almost 5 managers taking 5 students each from historically black universities, Fort Hare and so on a training program to become analysts and proposal managers in the asset management space. So we've done pretty well, and we've developed a PE program for the managers themselves by allocating funds to upcoming black managers. And we've done exceptionally well. It's not about just transformation, it's also about returns. Because our top, one of our top asset managers is a black firm that we have supported right from the outset. It's one of the top asset managers as we speak now, you know. So we've got almost 14 PE managers on our platform since we started about 4 or 5 years ago. We've been hard at work transforming the listed property sector. We've done quite a number of significant transactions in the sector that was not so transformed. And we continue to work hard to transform to ensure that also the historical advantages are allowed to participate in this important sector. We're driving adequate investments. In there we create jobs, and most importantly, we generate returns for our clients. We have presented our strategy last week, at the last time we met, as to where we are focusing our energies in the unlisted sector, so that we can drive economic growth, job creation, and returns for our clients. I'm talking to you. 30. Property investment, we are conscious of the fact that property can be very developmental and can create jobs, especially in an environment where construction is taking a beating. And there as well, we are positioning ourselves to put a significant amount of resources to make sure that we create jobs there in the property space, via new developments, refurbishments, and redevelopment. I think I mentioned in the last meeting as well that we created a significant amount of jobs through our refurbishment program that we started about 18 months ago. So we continue to make a difference in the economy as well as generating the returns for our clients. I must emphasize that our job is to take risk, calculated risk. On average, the portfolio has delivered almost 10% compact environmental project or retention. Now, you can't get everything right all the time. That's why we run a diversified portfolio. Some beds are going to work, some beds aren't going to work. I mean, the rule of thumb is that good beds must be far more than the bad ones. And we learn from the bad ones so we can continue to calibrate the investment process. This is what we are doing at the moment. We learn from the mistakes as we invest. On page 31, we talked to the PIC impact of economic growth that we've done so far. In the last few years, we have invested almost 34 billion in the economy. Through 6 billion in the private sector, almost 7 billion in economic infrastructure, slightly below a billion in environmental infrastructure focusing on renewable energy. We've done almost 2 billion in private equity to drive transformation. Small and medium enterprises, we've allocated quite a bit of cash there to drive small and medium enterprises. Special products, 4.5 billion, most of this designed to drive transformation in the business portfolio. Properties, 315 million, all of that creating a significant number of jobs and driving transformation. Africa, we're still building a portfolio. We've allocated almost 4.3 billion at the moment, or $384 US, in line with our prime mandates. And on page 83, we take you through the mandates. What is it that we've had? I think there was a question around, you know, how are the money structures, what are allocations, and most importantly, the limits, including credit limits for that matter. Now, mandates are confidential documents, so we've attempted to pull out relevant pages in the mandate so we can demonstrate to you that we have just permission for the clients to invest in low credit quality investment as well, as long as our management system is prudent enough to push low grades to higher grades and make our clients money. As I said, our job is to take risk, calculate risk. We're not going to take risk that we can't manage, but from time to time, reducing our way. But on a portfolio basis, we think we are on top of the game so far. And Chairperson, from page 40, let me just go to page 39. I just need my calendar. Chairperson, I've got my calendar class now. On page 39, there's a picture there that shows you the mandate in general. The decisions from how much we should be putting in cash, how much we should be putting in foreign bonds, 2%, foreign equity, developmental investment, 2%, and listed Africa investment, 3%, listed Africa, 2%, and so on and so forth. This is derived from the client mandate, you know, that we can invest in these asset classes, you know. So, all I'm saying is, don't be surprised if the tax is all over, because the mandate allows us to invest almost everywhere, except there are exceptions, of course, like I think it's arms. We can do arms, we can do gaming and gambling, you know. But by and large, it gives us a fair amount of flexibility. And the next page is just a table of, you know, a table picture of the diagram that you see on 39. Private equity, 3%, 0.6%. Developmental portfolio, 2%, 0 to 4%, and listed investment, 45, with limits for 40 to 45%. And then it breaks out the bonds as well, between nominal, inflation-linked bonds, unlisted bonds, developmental bonds, and most importantly, unlisted, higher credit risk opportunities. I think it's very important to mention that, higher credit risk opportunities. The risk will be higher, but if they are managed properly, you may end up with good returns. That's top two subgrades investment. Listed bonds, the next phase, listed property, unlisted property, Africa equity, and so on and so forth. So this is the money that we've agreed with the client. By and large, it continues on page 42, 7%. The picture that I was reading is now nicely shown in on page 43, nicely modified. And then on 2.6, it talks about listed bonds. These are listed bonds, the kind of credit rating, minimum credit rating that we can invest in. UIF, also a similar kind of a mandate. We target in excess of CPI that we require. And most importantly, in the last few years or so, they've given us a mandate to also invest in development and investments to drive jobs. The most important thing is save jobs in instances where that is required and grow the economy. And then we put a sample of a UIF mandate on page 46. Sample of the mandate. It goes on. I think the most important slide would be page 50 that shows you the limit in the capital markets, how much you can put in currency bonds, risk-adjusted guarantees, SOEs, A-rated bonds, and so on and so forth, and money markets and cash. The credit limits on 54 are similar to the GPS ones. We have mandate for compensation commissioners, which is not much different from the UIF in terms of the limits and the asset allocation. And that takes us to page 61, where we talk about the question of around investment philosophy as well as investment policy. I think ours is very simple. Our job is to invest in line with the client mandate. And the client will specify, as I said, parameters within which we should operate. But we've adopted a framework that says take risk, calculated risk, avoid risk that are not going to give anything. That is the philosophy. If you go to page 52, we've spoken about this picture that says we need economic growth for assets to grow. Now, if you are faced with low economic growth, what you do? You respond by investing in the economy, to stimulate the economy, and you specify the sectors that are kept us nicely in the national development plan, in the new growth path and so on, where we are going to channel our money. I think the Deputy Minister has mentioned that we have now the allocation of almost 70 billion from our lines in the next 3 years, 5, 7, to invest in the economy in line with developmental strategy. And we are hard at work, especially in the situation where we are faced with a personal boundary. Edwin Moody's has just not downgraded us. They put us on the negative watch. But we need to demonstrate that the principal things that we're going to do to grow the economy in order to avoid a downgrade. And PIP is part of that process in terms of our investments. Before we spoke about at length last time, the role that we play in the economy, the size of the portfolio in relation to the JSC, a big player in the fixed income space, keeping the lights on through bonding ESCO and many other sides, and demonstrating our capacity to influence the economy. And we have a plan in place to deal with that. On page 56, 2.4, we give you the sectors that are of interest that we believe are going to create jobs, from mining, beneficiation, energy, renewable, manufacturing, agriculture, agro-processes, financial services, ICT, infrastructure, social infrastructure, which includes health and education infrastructure. On page 64, we were reporting to the issue of the sub-investment grade there. Again, we showed the limits that the client has given to us. In the business space, in the administrative space, we use internal credit rating system to assess the quality of an investment. On 70, we show all the names there in the business space. UIF, as you said, the question there was UIF has a huge impact on socio-economic transformation. Does PIC make or pretend or produce similar intents for UIF as for GPF? And he said, yes, the portfolios are not necessarily the same, you know, the benchmarks are not necessarily the same, but we perform in line with the mandate of the UIF as we perform in line with the mandate of the GPF. So there's no difference in terms of what the client, depending on what the client has required us to. In addition to that, they requested us to put some money in development and investment, which they call socially responsible investment. And they define it as their requirement tends to be compliant of risk-free rate, plus other premiums, which could be liquidity, volatility, etc. But then they take a small cut for social impact. So minor social impact. And this social impact could be, you know, taking more risk in instruments that will create jobs, that will save jobs, and so on and so forth. There was a question around what does development investment principle mean? And we detail what is it, but we understand it to be from job creation to preservation of jobs, promotion of entrepreneurs, skill development and transfer, improving access to affordable housing, healthcare and education, improving infrastructure, roads, rail, water, telecommunications and so on, greening of the environment, promotion of black empowerment, rural development, increasing foreign exchange earning and substitution. Those are the activities that we will do development according to the PIC. And there was a question around what is the allocation given to SMEs? At this stage, the client collectively has allocated about 6 billion, but we have to be responsible as to how we deploy the money over time through different channels and partnerships that we are working on as we speak. How much money has been allocated to Shibaya and what kind of support does the PIC provide to investing companies in Shibaya as the PIC is considered an important role player in growing the economy? I think we spoke about this at length. The total allocation more or less would be 104 billion, you know, if you add UIF activity as well as GPF over a reasonable period of time of employment. And we will invest across the capital structure, from equity on one hand to risk-free debt or government or closer to quality government debt in that sort of spectrum. It will really depend on our risk appetite and parameters as we deploy the cash. Most importantly, we mentioned partnering with other players. There could be other asset managers, there could be investing companies and shares, so that we are able to derive maximum benefits out of the investment community. And what are the allocations in the past 3 years? In Shibaya, and are they increasing? Yes, there's an increment already in terms of TI activity. And we would like to cover the whole of South Africa as far as possible. There was a question around there's no black suppliers in the retail sector that supply the retailers. Indeed, this is an area that we have been focused on. We've already organize meetings with the players from PKFA to Spire and so on, so we can talk about how they can start securing product from your small retailers in the communities, so that we can provide SMEs. It will be an integrated plan. We've got investment in Vista, we change the retail space. We are already in discussions as to how they can play a role in ensuring that we give opportunity to the small men in the city. Those sponsors or owners and so on, how they can access product at reasonable price, so they are able to pass it on to the communities at, again, reasonable price, but at the same time, maybe a bit of money for themselves. So those discussions are taking place as we speak. Chairperson, should I continue? You are spot on, Chairman. I'm now moving to page 75.
African Bank collapsed some time ago, and and with that to set up the good bank and the bad bank, and TSC is subscribing to is participating in the capitalization of the good bank. I think the main reasons here would be for, you know, the preservation of jobs, and I think it's also important to point out that the PIC sees, other than, you know, the support for the financial system in the country, the PIC sees that continued access to the banking sector by the lower income segment is important. So when you look over the long term, that investment, we think, you know, if you look at the combination of the SWAP and the PIC holding in that bank, that it's a significant and strategic. The second is Anglo-American, where, you know, members will be aware that the company is streamlining the portfolio and it puts a lot of assets on the market for sale. We think that and in fact the impact on South Africa is quite profound, given the fact that a lot of those assets are in South Africa, and therefore the PSC would want to play a more influential role in that process, and we've put up our holding up significantly, but you see that the percent of the portfolio is still quite minor. ArcelorMittal is another one on page 77 where we did participate in the rights issue, and I think it's important to say this is a company where capital spend had not really been at the right levels. So that combined with a big increase in imports from China of steel, it put them in a difficult position. However, I think the government has put protective duties there, and we think that going forward, jobs will be protected. There will be a net loss of jobs of just under 5,000, but I think we are confident that jobs will be protected there. Budget Africa, on page 78, has been in the news recently, and indeed over the last week, Barclays PLC is selling down from about 62.3% to 15%. The reason being that they want to deconsolidate once they sell down probably 15% or so. So last week they did put an accelerated book build, in other words, selling shares on the market, and that was around 12%. We did participate in the book build. I think this is in line with our client mandates, where we need to track the index in line with mandates, and also I think we think that as Barclays PLC sells down, the liquidity this bank will increase on the JSE, so it's important that we participate in that. Obviously, going forward, there will be more coming to the market, more shares coming to the market, and PIC will look to see whether there are possibilities to participate further. Impala Platinum is another one where we took or followed our rights when the company did a rights issue, because the general balance is strengthening and saving jobs. I think also it's important to say that as long-term investors, we our view that the PGM sector, the platinum sector, will recover. In fact, we're already seeing some green shoots there. So we want to be positioned appropriately. Lonely is another one where clearly we took a view that if we, A, because we like the platinum sector, we feel that not supporting and letting a company like that go bust was going to result in a loss of over 35,000 jobs. And again, you know, in line with what the CEO said, if our view is that change will not come over time, we put money into play, and this is what we did with women. I think we went in at the right, and after consolidation, 21 rounds, we are already almost double the price today as a CTA. This is an investment where we have regular, meetings with management to make sure that the strategy remains in place. MTN is a company where PIC has got significant holding. It's clear to us that the risk compliance did fail. We've been engaging with the board, and we are in the process of making sure that the board is strengthened. It's an investment that we continue to work very closely. I think that's all we can say at the moment. We've got meetings scheduled with the company, and we continue to be actively involved. All Mutual recently announced the managed separation, which will see the company split into four businesses and dissolve the head office in London, which we all welcome because same as for Anglo-American, I think all these South African companies that have got very high costs of office and people in London is something that in this environment where commodity prices etc. are very low, we would like them to probably come home, as Ruslan would say. And this is, I think, PIC welcomes and supports the strategic intent, and we believe really to eliminate unnecessary costs and so on. And obviously, we are waiting for the development there. Energy Mila, I think Dr. Dan did speak to SAB Mila and our involvement there, and we will certainly get more involved if the deal is approved in working with them for the development of space, developing pharma and so on. And it's also sad to say SAB employs nearly 10,000 people. And more than 75% of those are from previous disadvantaged background. Vodafone, is the dominant mobile operator in our land, and very good earnings. And when the opportunity came for us to put money there, we did buy it, and I think it has done very well for us. And lastly, I think there was a question on Eren Energy. Eren Energy is an E&P producer, exploration production oil company. And typically, these companies can be a little volatile. However, I think and we can make that information available to members when we look at, since we invested in this company, when we look at performance versus the peers. In fact, it has performed fairly well. There have been issues, particularly production-related issues, but we are in very close, discussion with the company, and we are confident that production will increase once again. Once more, I think I will stop there.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. We are now on unlisted investments. The questions that are related to unlisted investments. The first one is independent news media. As my colleague, Kodesh Omari, will continue that on behalf of the PIC.
Thank you very much. I think the main question behind that was on the transaction rationale for investing actually in the independent news. I think the main key three elements of investing in this sort of business is that we follow the consumer as an investment theme, and because this business has about 18 strong titles, which have a very long history of loyalty, and because it also touches on the consumer, we actually were interested in a business on that level, a very strong business model. And I think another factor which was a lot more interesting is the fact that it was quite successful in a banking lounge, which in the form of Isolese. And Isolese had already, after investing, has a transit into the East Corsa lounge. And we also believe that you can actually add more lounges, which from a social impact perspective is a very good underpin. And the performance of those businesses have been actually quite better than the actual Indian services that we have. And I think that is the main crux of the of why we actually love that business. I think that another aspect is the fact that, you know, history of the business has always been, you know, 0% ownership, it was internationally owned, and to effect a VEE transaction, which is part of our social mandate, as it is enshrined in the mandate that we have between us and GPF. So we have an ability to actually do a VEE transaction at 55% VEE with the Kinjalo consortium. We moved the business from a level 1 to a level 2. We also implemented a lot of transformation in terms of top management, middle management, escaping downwards to start. And we gave ourselves a period of about 4 years to actually get this business to a form that we would like and can be actually empowered. As it relates to the investment structure of this transaction, it touches a bit on cost. And the loans in terms of the question has actually been raised. Typical private equity transactions have loans structured in such a way that investors provide money to the transaction, make their money first. So the loan that you see, and I think the question that keeps occurring, is that it is not dissimilar to any other private equity investment that is made by either your people, or Carlyle, any other international private equity investor. So the interest will always accrue to make sure that the investors who actually put money actually make their money first before the consortium makes their money. Obviously, the consortium, they also put in their own money in this transaction, they will make money per party to all the other cash investors. And I think another aspect that we do is that we've always seen private equity and the PIC as a catalyst to affect foreign investors. That always helps us when it comes to foreign direct investors. The CAD fund, which is sitting with roughly about $5 billion, $5 billion private equity investment for Africa, came along with us, invested alongside us, and I think we also like that attraction. I think a key differentiating factor is that the consortium made a proposition to us that they can add value. I think one of the key differences in terms of the performance that we've seen over the last 1.5 years that we've invested in this business is that we always believe that if you have a VEE compliant business, at the moment it is a large VEE ownership in terms of media provision, the government spend will actually be attractive to us. That we haven't seen, we're still making a lot of money out of the private sector, and we think that will be an uplift. I think the recent communications from government in terms of how they're going to look at how we spend money in media is actually positive, so we believe that we're actually going to make more money. As it relates to the performance of the current business, it is performing above the head weight. There is a phenomenon called the J-curve. We're still above the J-curve. The J-curve is basically a period which allows the private investment to go through the changes that are required and before we start making returns, so we are well ahead of the J-curve. I will move to the next question. I think the next question was on the P98 loans on independent use. I think the main question was to say what is the registered name of independent SA. On page 85, I think we've listed it to say that it's an independent media proprietary limited company with a registration number that is listed there. So the next question, page 86, it relates to Apricel. We've also provided the names of the company. I think this method to check are more federal grades. I think we provided that information. And if you move on to the next aspect in terms of the unlisted portfolio of what it looks like, I think a key caveat that we need to put forward is that the sort of non-disclosure agreements that we find with companies that are particularly in the private, as it compares to the listed, is that we cannot disclose certain information, especially in particular the terms of the loan and how they look like, because it provides a certain competitive edge to the listed stocks. So what we've done to intend to actually answer is actually show what the portfolio looks like in terms of sectors that we are exposed to. And unlisted investments are tilted towards developmental investments. You will notice there on page 87 that roughly about 6 billion, close to 7 billion is in housing and manufacturing, which is what actually creates jobs. We have the large stakes, teams about 13 billion of commitments already dispersed. A little bit more than that. Most investment sessions are to do with follow-on investments. And energy has been the theme of South Africa probably for the last 10 years, and it's likely going to be a theme for the next coming 10 years. So we're showing that we're actually committing to the solar investments. So systems are roughly about 55 billion of commitments towards unlisted investments. And as it relates to the rest of Africa, we're still, I think we're still walking the path and trying to understand how unlisted investments work there. The markets are different. They're very different to what South Africa looks like. And you can see that we are walking the slow path. But I believe that we've done such great strides and people starting to understand what the PIC is about. Governance is something that we've actually put on the table. And I think we can start having more accelerated process. I think our agreement with GPA was always to say that we're going to spend the next 4 years investing slowly, but we will accelerate post that. And I believe we are on track to do that. Okay. Thank you very much. So let's stop it and take over from us.
Thanks, Professor. Thanks, Chair. On page 8 about performance, I think we touched on this before. It's just a lot more detail comparing PIC performance to the PS. Both local and global. And then there was a question on page 90 about expected returns on student accommodation. We expect anything between 9% and 14%. 9% is secure type instrument to 14%, which is closer to equity investment. We don't expect to make a lot of money out of this, but the returns are going to come out of the product, which is student, which we expect to make a difference in the economy in the long run. I think on ESG and stakeholders, we have an ESG policy, environmental, social and governance policy. And most importantly, we are signatories to the UNPRI, which there's an expectation that we will incorporate into our investment process ESG principles. And that's what we're doing at the moment in all our assets, both listed and unlisted. And we're busy with deeper analysis on state-owned entities as well, because we are the biggest debt provider in that space. So we place governance at the top of the list, because we believe that in any company, if we get governance correct, the leadership, then the leadership will be able to drive strategy, drive good social behavior, and look after the environment. So that's where we're placing a lot of our energies on. We do sometimes, from time to time, appoint directors onto the board of companies, some from within the PIC, some out there. It is very critical for us to put the right people on the board rather than just PIC directors. So we do engage with companies from time to time as to the type of skills that they require, or the gap that they see in the body of knowledge of the board that we need to plug in. And so we look for the right talent so that we have much more to follow up board. business on page 52, our governance framework and the principle thereof, you know, in some amount of detail. Page 93. And what this also says that we cover all other classes and sectors in terms of our ESG implementation. We've mentioned the legal entities. We are focusing a lot now more on governance before we can participate in any kind of an investment or an instrument that they place on there, whether it's a bond or cash or short-term instrument. We do engage them quite extensively on governance issues. On communication, perhaps I would hand over to my colleague John Porter, who can give a sense of where we are on communication with stakeholders.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Mendes and Kate. In general, we communicate from the CRG website. Quite a lot of communication there. Then we deal with media, both proactive and reactive. With regards to, there was a specific question on people that are seeking funding, the TIF platform on the PRC website, which is manned by the investment team to see all applications that come in and sit to them. Communication with investee companies is based on both portfolio managers that have issues with regards to more the financial aspects, as well as the ESG matrix that we've developed. So there's communication portfolio managers as well as the ESG team, and it's normally on quite a high level. Many times the chairperson of the company, CEO of the company, present at this meeting, also at a high level from the PIC side. With regards to clients, there's different forums that we use. All the clients get a quarterly meeting where we report back at the quarterly meeting. There's also many of them ESCO meetings that happen. There's also certain liaison committees such as the financial liaison committee. There's an ESG liaison between the GPF and the PIC, so there's various platforms where these discussions take place. And then also with the regulators, our risk and legal team are in constant communication with the different regulators. And I must say that we are busy currently reviewing our whole communication strategy. We have already started to work as well to benchmark our website with some of the top international fund managers, their website, so there will be a redesign of the whole PIC website. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, on finance related questions, I'll ask my colleague Maxa Pomore to take us through the answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. The first question related to a report that a comment was made by the Auditor General on our financial statements for the prior year ending, and related to conflict of interest that was not declared. We highlighted that there was actually a service was rendered by one of the entity, or with one of the members of the accounting authority to not disclose that their partner, their spouse, was actually a partner at entity. The value of that amount is just below 1 million rand. The next question related to the reason why policies are increasing. Maybe first off, I start highlighting the nature of what's important there. So this is not just prevention, just please remember, it includes training, it includes travel, and all the related. Now, we track back to what everybody has been indicating, how the additional funds being allocated, meaning that we've got about 104 billion rand being allocated, meaning that there's a need for more meetings. In the execution of that. The other critical thing is highlighting, which Dr. Jan previously highlighted, 5 million non-executive board members, so that has allowed it into the increase. There's a new committee for the IT, which is included. Then you've got things like the fund investment panel, which is a subcommittee of the IT. Previously, it had one non-executive member and an expert. The expert Steve which previously distorted consulting fees, but there was a board view to increase governance and oversight and also manage conflict to increase the composition of the non-executive. So now you have a total of 3 non-executive board members coming in. Then you've got, you know that she indicates that it's quite critical that we train board members, therefore there's an allocation for training. In understanding that the PRC is actually made up of 5 entities when you refer to the private sector, it's quite key that there's different types of training that are provided to the board member. Training that's related to property, developmental investment, and just space. Then the one other big cost that actually relates is some of the board members are not based in Johannesburg, so therefore there's transportation costs. The next question related to why the travel element of the PRC is actually increasing. based on the nature of the system, not just its travel, which is accommodation and all forms, but with the allocation of the 104 billion, and actually the current portfolio that we already have, there's increasing in one of due diligence to the performance, which is actually borne by the PRC, portfolio monitoring, which is quite critical on that, in order to make sure that the investment is making money, we need to actually monitor. So we actually go to these investments to actually make sure that what management is representing is a true reflection of what's happening. So that's ultimately what's driving in is the investment strategy. But the key thing we're always cognizant of is the cost containment measures that need to be put in place to make sure that we actually do get base value for money and we are partnering with correctly.
If I can be allowed to dig in upwards here. The next question.
I think the matter is with the public projector, as we should say that we requested to investigate the matter, and I think we are waiting to have money. But I think that's what to say that there was no money for PIC, that also is yesterday, and the for whatever people, I think. This one was done last time, I think.
So I think there was an issue of Gazprom MOU, and we explained that this is just a relationship because we want to set up shop here. And coupled with that, there was an issue of nuclear. Fortunately, our line is here. They haven't allocated money to nuclear yet, so we can't do nuclear at this stage. Chairperson, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation.
Thank you. This is odd. Other private equity operators have no problem disclosing what they have invested in, and none of them has a portfolio close to this size. There is, and it goes on to say, the PIC's refusal to disclose this information to the committee prevents Parliament from doing its job of holding the executive to account. Now, that summarizes precisely my difficulty. So, on the question of confidentiality clauses, which you referred to on page 86 of your submission, first of all, I presume that the PIC initiates or requires the confidentiality clause when entering into or making investments. First, is that correct? Second, would it be possible for the PIC to provide us with a copy of the standard confidentiality clause? And third, I wonder if you could explain the purpose of the confidentiality clause, because it appears that the purpose is in fact to prevent scrutiny and oversight of investments in the PIC's unlisted portfolio. Finally, on the issue of the confidentiality clause, I'd like to pose a question to the GEP, which is the largest client of the PIC. Is the GEP comfortable with the fact that the PIC reinvests your assets, has confidentiality clauses in place, and is refusing to disclose details of its investments in unlisted portfolios to Parliament? Is the GEP comfortable with that opposition? Does the GEP think perhaps that something needs to be done about this? Okay. Then let me move on to the questionable investments, beginning with the investment into independent newspapers. Now, when you traverse the whole question, the question of the transaction rationale, which at least from a non-specialist like myself, and possibly from a pensioner's perspective, looks much like an investment into a horse and cart on the day that the Model T Ford hit the streets. On the investment rationale, you concede that in fact there was an error. The investment was based on the assumption that government's ad spend would increase in the business, which you concede it did not. Now, what information was provided to you that would cause you to believe that that was a credible claim? I would submit that one call to National Treasury would have confirmed that that claim was not credible. And further, the further claim that this advertising spend may materialize that claim, and therefore the outlook remains positive, cannot possibly be true if you listen to President Jacob Zuma's State of the Nation address, where he said with some relish that ad spend will be cut in newspapers. So that's on the rationale. Then your reply, frankly, is designed to obscure and not to illuminate. Could you tell us, in respect of the two loans that you referred to, in first instance, what is the current amount of the outstanding loan, that's the shareholder loan and the loan to second value, broken down by the capital amount and the interest still owed? So what is the actual amount? And when does this loan, when is payment actually required? At what point is independent newspaper required to begin to pay these loans? That's the independent newspapers. On the whole question of error management, if I understand correctly, sir, you are presumably have specialist knowledge as a shareholder representative on error energy. What you didn't disclose, or rather stunning outlook, is that Aaron Energy, in fact, had made recently an 858 million rand loss, that it has 60 million rand worth of cash available, and it has liabilities of about 2.8 billion rand. And in fact, the one commentator suggests this is exactly the kind of investment the PIC probably wishes when the unlisted portfolio, so the Parliament couldn't in fact scrutinize and come back to the side of this investment. Could you touch
finance the so-called 9-12 moment on the value of the assets under management in the PIC, and then also on the question of documents, we ask you to discover certain documents. The one document that you did not discover was government's strategic intent statements. I wonder if you could provide me with reasons why that document was not discovered. Thank you.
Thank you. It makes a difference. Thank you from is from the one rural area in Limpopo. Thank you, Commissioner. And let me welcome the responses that Dr. Machida was presenting to us. I think I want to be an ordinary woman of Zambia, Dr. Machida, a beneficiary of the PIC in the form of a teacher, because these public servants are the ones who are contributing to it. If I listen to you from time to time in all the responses and whatever comments you are making, there's an important phrase that you use, calculated risk, calculated risk, which is important. But I want to bring your attention, because I don't want to be like the GA and bring myself closer to people who matter most, the owners of this fund, because they too must stand to benefit. I know you're studying it, your investments are good, good returns, but in between, they should also benefit. And there's one area which I think I would want you to look at. In the same tone of addressing the students' accommodation, there's a big challenge of public servants not affording housing. Some call it the job market and all those other things. Where is the PIC to mitigate on this situation? Because currently, we can't live decently, but they've got money that is there that can take care of them going forward. How best can you come with an initiative that can assist them to have that dignity now, and that they be able to pay over time? You can create a portfolio around that so that they can be able to have a decent life in their lifetime and not after the fact. I think it's one of the areas. In the same tone that we are dealing with the student accommodation, because you were even saying our aim is not to make more money out of that, but to make a difference in that. So I would urge you to really look closely into that. See how you can, whether with the Minister of Housing or municipalities or SAGA, look into this thing and property development and mitigate on the challenges that our people are going through, because these are the people who are supposed to benefit. And I think you have seen the challenges of them wanting to access their pensions because of some of these challenges and so on and so on. So if you can just also look at that in the tone, not undermining the calculated risk that you spoke about. The second issue, the same thing from the Vigiela. You spoke about black asset managers and starting to make a mark around that. I will take that and even take the, one of the pillars of our economy, which is mine, and I'll help you on what you are doing there. The sitting here, you know, I see recycling the same big companies and big people, but not starting to stretch the surface to new entrants. And I'll tell you why. You know, the ANC government at some point said, let's try to make people to also, even if the mining, whatever belongs to government, that people can be able to participate and do all those things. That's like how South African women in mining came into being, and all South African women in energy, WUSA, and all those things came into being. Is that money behind you? He spoke about the cash fund. When Sawima goes to cash fund to say, and I'm making Sawima as an example, we have prospecting rights, can you assist us? These are green fields or brown fields or whatever, cash fund says, do 1, 2, 3, when your thing is, when your project is towards bankability, come back to us. Now, who must deal with some of these things? If PIC is not dealing with it, and cash fund is saying we want mega projects with bankability, who must assist? Because government wanted to mitigate and empower people to start to participate in the economy. And mining being one of the pillars, I hear you, you are assisting learning, you are assisting this and that. You know, if we talk women, it will be withhold, it will be this woman. And when are we starting to go to ordinary women and PIC like itself with the same calculated risk to say, some tatana, some begande, some tatane, some isale? When is PIC going to do that? And I'm speaking on behalf of rural women from all over the country that I represent. And I'm declaring the women's league, and that's why I'm doing all those things. In the same vein, agriculture. And you see, even if our economy is not doing well, but agriculture continues, even if it's a seasonal job-creating sector. Today, technology is assisting that it becomes an all-year-round activity with downstream activities that you also come to. Many of our rural communities have land through the land claim process or land restitution process. Where is the PIC in that space to assist these communities together with the rural development minister or the Department of Agriculture? Because most of the land that is being given there, it's prime land for agriculture, it's prime land for this and that, and today as we speak, it's hectares and hectares of land that has been given back. But people, because whether they don't meet your criteria or whatever, they are unable to start to utilize some of these things. So I'm just saying, in as much as you are waiting, Dr. Matilda, for people to come to you, you can also be aggressive and go the other way and start to look at areas where you know South Africa has been doing very well in terms of product. You have the NDP, you want to see yourself implementing some of the pillars in the NDP. And there are some of the areas that can mitigate on some of the shortfalls that we have in the economy and then be able to do some of the things. The same goes to your intervention on the solutions. And this is my last contribution. One of the things that our people will say, and it was through NAPCOG then, and I'm probably in engagement with whoever you're talking to, you also talk to those organized groups. They were saying, and this, I'm not going to forget check. People who are, people who are in the township trying to invest and grow the township economy, your Pakistanis and them, they have mastered the art of getting bulk cheaper, bulk buying cheaper, and they are organized in doing that, and that's why they are beating us at that level, because they can sell to us cheaper and we end up losing us. So without us fighting, and which is where you are now coming in, let us then empower the old shop owners to have the same way of being organized to buy bulk and get cheaper, and then be able to compete in that space. Because, you know, and that's why you are a member of the SACP, because you don't like this competition that is there, that capital brings. So, but it's an obvious thing that happened in there. So, I'm just saying, that attempt will really come heavy to our community, so that we don't close the old sorts of those owners in that game that you were dealing with. But Nina, until you deal with the things of women in mining and assisting our gap markets in property, public servants who can afford housing, but other people are using their money to be richer, and they themselves can access your money, their money, to deal with some of the things our way.
Guidance for the media, I'm just hungry. I'd like to suggest that GEPF is here because of PICT, so you might so to speak, right?
Yeah.
The DPAA has come with a presentation as well. So I'm cool. All I'm telling you is that I would like to have some leeway and finish 115, 130. Because you have people coming all from Swanee or wherever it comes from. I'm not getting into it. On the other hand, what people are asking is also reasonable. So I'm just saying, when you put your questions, just take a kind of time. But as I said, I'm in your hands, so I hope it's Chinese. I'm not implying anything about the Chinese.
You're not in
your
hands. Thank you. I've got two questions. And I'm with you. I've got two questions. And lamentations. I'm going to start with the lamentations because they are easier, and then I'll end up with the two questions. I didn't discuss this, the idea of this, so you must watch it for me. I didn't disturb it. Sir, first I want to say to Dr. Machinga, I envy you and your team with the task, and has a very interesting task in it. Especially when you look at the public expectation, how people judge the post, an institution like the TIC and the foreign direct investor. There will always be a thin line of understanding what is the role of PIC and what an investor will do. So sometimes, take us through, you see, take us through to help us to understand that the role of a foreign direct investor will take a higher risk than the calculated risk that PIC is expected to take because of the mandate that you get from who you represent. You see, if you don't take us to this moment, we will always think that you are at a latitude to stand and invest as we need. So bear with me. I'm one person who's very ignorant. I take long to understand, and I have high expectations of the PLC. Now, let me go to this of my limitations. You see, when you do work like you do, there will be those who expect you to disclose. I don't know where you know that. Would you disclose, especially when you're dealing with things like unlisted investments? I've never heard any circumstance in any country where you do that. And I'm inviting my friend here, but she's very busy in business. And I know he's not bringing me on this one. And I'll tell you why I have this perception. You see, you get into the African market, right? That's one of the fundamental pillars you want to achieve. It's a very interesting market. It's a very unstable market. You will have other players. You have the African Development Bank being part of the players that has been there before you when you established in 2005. It has invested in major projects in water and chemicals in Florida, in North Africa, in the West Africa. When you do that, if you want to disclose and tell David Marina what you're doing, I wonder whether it will be competitive. That's my comment. And I'll leave it at that to look at it. But, you know, Mr. Mabuse said something very interesting. You brought my attention, you know, government spend
And you see, government spends on the media houses, so he's the custodian of it. The national observers can either decide to do it. Gained a specific interest on this one. And on one thing was changed. There's a BE element in it, and I worked in the paper industry, and one of the things we pushed for is to have even more than 55% spam on that. So can we have a time where we just have a discussion on this one to ensure that given the cost containment measures that we try to put in place, but the fact that we want to upscale investment in those sectors, how then can we look at that? We're not trying to dictate terms. As a comment, that's not our preparing to dictate terms in terms of the outlook of investment. Like others are doing, they want you to know why you invested in that, why error, why the deadline, why you investing. It's not our preparing, you know. Our system is that the person gives 20% and this consumption is available. Who cares? 20%? If you can make 10%, it's doing pretty well, okay. Now, I have a question, probably two questions. I'm interested in the performance of our chairman, Eddie Miller. Can you get more clarity on how he's performing? And why are you not encouraging people to buy government bonds? Who's responsible for that? Can I, as I put £1,000 in a government bond, get it going to sell over a long period of time? And can we encourage public servants to buy government bonds? Have we done that? I don't think so, in a way that me and others think. So, Chef, I don't want to get into other feelings that I'm not even going to address because, you know, ask me a question for the sake of it. My child, my boy, and that like, children. And I'm interested to hear what Ben is going to say. I think he's going to say, and the letter in his own capacity. It would be interesting to hear what he's going to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chief.
So before I speak, it was the best investment for the DH Invest in David. The very best investment you can do in David.
Thank you, Mr. Chief. Maybe I'll start by saying I'm going to agree with David Manion something very fundamental. But first, I think that the models give me a lot of information. In general, there's good content in here. On the whole, I enjoyed what I read in here. I had two fundamental disagreements, which I'll touch on later. But I'd like to point everybody's attention to page 27 first, under section listed equities and BEE. And we as an accountant, and I think for our committee, we've got to look at this very carefully. Because there's a lot of political parties in South Africa that does not agree that there are two major issues in South Africa and they go hand in hand. The one is unemployment, and the other is economic transformation. The problem with economic transformation is how you measure it. Now, it's very interesting to see that in 2013, the so-called white model of the listed capital, this is Julius Malema coin, when you enter the stock exchange, was 23% flat. Obviously, it's been progression. I think that seems to line forward to date, that there has been an improvement. And I think we as a committee need to look at objective mechanisms such as this. So how do we measure to see what's the rate of confirmation happening in the country? And linked to this, for the pension funds also tell us that a liability value, the net present value liability of the claims, is split that into the horrible apartheid racial classification system, which is still based on classic binary body based on rights. That's the one thing we've inherited from the apartheid and which hopefully one day we'll get away from to really non-racial country. But for now, it would be interesting to the pension fund, what it's definitely cost them more towards black owned effectively. And going forward, we need to monitor that, we need to monitor our input on the stock exchange. And perhaps we should, before it gets we should have like a desktop source to discuss at what point does white model listed capital become colored model listed capital, and when maybe that might be at 51%, and 75% of something maybe being put a black model listed capital. And it helps use for which we can measure it. But anyway, my two fundamental issues go on page 25, where we look at the benchmarking and link that to page 88 and 89. Because the benchmark question all goes back to the international benchmarking. And the gentleman that spoke about the website also spoke about benchmarking the website for international sites. My problem is that you cannot compare South Africa with the United States or Europe. Inflation rates are different, rates of return are different. We need to benchmark based on South African asset management. And this fund is managed that overseen by the Financial Services Board asset management. So you've got many asset managers, many pension funds in this country. And for me, a really important comparison is comparing apples with apples. Don't compare yourself to an Asia-based fund where they have negative returns on money in the bank with what we've got here. So we've got a 40% overall return, which is pretty good. It can be better, but I think for a fund such as this, it's acceptable. But please, I think going forward, let's just, you can use the international things for the size of the fund that you need to start to get. But we do need to look at domestic benchmarking as well, compared to other nations. And then, so we can support the data that's completely independent. I never read the article that he's referring to, but I was pretty shocked at the answer on 86. Whilst confidentiality agreements have a place, you know, of the very important things there, for probably hundreds of years, since the double counting system and reporting in place, the company investments are recorded. We invested in company ABC, and our total investment is 100 million or whatever the case might be. Now, I understand that these might be considered to be immaterial individually, but overly, if you take the total 25 billion invested, with a total of 55 billion is what we committed to invest, over 5% of the total fund value, if you consider Anglo's at 2.3%. So I think that this is an area that we're going to really look at, because it does raise red flags when you don't want to dispose of who you're investing in, and it doesn't allow us to ask questions, you know, because as David pointed out, I mean, the question says, we don't think we've invested in the company directly or indirectly, but I mean, the public wants to see what we've invested in, and it's through that process that better scrutiny is going to be possible. So I fundamentally disagree with so not at least giving us a company name and the total investor. We don't even know the terms of the investment directs. That might be subject to non-disclosure, and there's many other things that are subject to non-disclosure. But investors in a company is a public documentation, and we can go to the individual companies and check the share register. So the general principle in law is that the shareholders of a company should be ascertainable. And obviously in this case, we are a major investor, we should be able to know who we invest in to consider the risk of the DRC. Thank you.
Sure, thank you very much. I think it's important for me to first of all probably outline my assumptions before I ask whatever questions. The first assumption I have is that we have an extremely competent team. The profile of the team that we have at PLC, to me, has the right skills in it, and I therefore have no reason to doubt your strategic intentions. The reason why I'm saying that is because sometimes, you know, other people approach issues from the space of doubt before you can even show us you are capable of, you know, they move from that space of doubt that you are not competent enough to be where you are. And where I am, I think I have full confidence on that. And secondly, I also don't think there is anything wrong whatsoever with you benchmarking yourself with the UFA. PIC is the right fund manager for Africa. So you are going to be the best, compare yourself with the world. And yes, you may try here in South Africa, but how many financials are managing the amount that you are managing right now? And so I think that's got to be clear. Let's understand that so that we know where we are going. The other thing that I also wanted to know, which is the question that is linked to the question that David asked, except that both of us are approaching it from different angles, because I have a different ideological orientation from him, and my perspective, therefore, is not going to be the same. You know, I wanted to ask a question around the unlisted investment. And my question around the unlisted investment is that I wanted to understand from you You've made a point around the issue of quality internal credit rating system. I wanted to know what sort of five key critical areas that your internal credit rating that system probably looks at. And I also wanted to say to you the reality is that internationally, there is an appetite on unlisted entities, although I'm not sure the reason why they are late, because most of the time they can have very strong returns, and they can also be perceived as being of low mortality. Now, I wanted to understand that aspect of your internal credit rating system so that we know what we are dealing with here. The second one was around the issue of you had 40 EE managers, black managers. Can you take us to your confidence about what the value of the portfolio there has been monitored? I think one must not observe overall. My view is that the PCI is performing pretty well. And an entity like this one, it would be unfair for us to actually look at the, if there is one area that is that falls between the cracks, we make a big noise about it as if the overall story is not good. The overall story is good. But obviously we have to ensure fiscal prudence, that's our role. We have to oversee you, we have to make sure that you are calm. But on the whole, I think it's equally important for us to acknowledge that you are doing pretty good. The final question, Chair, that I needed to get from KC is that the reality is that the international finance space is changing. And again, the reality that institutions like yourself, and this is right now when people talk about financial markets, actually talking about you. Because a lot of money is now sitting with institutions like EIC and not managing that. Now, I wanted to know what is your take on issues of what is your take on the global investment space? Given the current environment and the fact that the reason why I'm asking you that is because the statistician general delivered very devastating news to us that we've lost about 300,000 jobs in this course, which is very scary. And I therefore wanted you to know how are you going to be positioning yourself given this current environment, and also how are you positioning yourself in the global market space? And I'm talking to you as a financial market and as a force to reckon with. I'm not just talking to you as an ambitious thing that is sitting there. You actually have it always and you, to me, you have the command that anybody can have, and that would be my take, Chair. Citizen, I think I'm going to stop there. No, this one is very important. Chair, each time we keep on talking about addressing the demand side, the supply side of the economy, especially when we're talking about black people or black participants in the economy, especially black Africans. Now, I wanted you to know, also, given the major threat that we have in the world, which is food security, what is our take on that, especially given the fact that we are now trying to balance things out. We've been stuck in the demand side of the economy. We now need to get more black people on the supply side of the economy as well. Is there anything that you have been looking at? And is there anything that your internal rating agents, whatever you call it, is looking at in terms of what sort of key participants that you are looking for that you will have appetite for. Thank you.
Thank you, GM and Dr. Mashina for the presentation and your team. I used to have the process, a professor would say to me as his director, say, either he's wise or he's not wise, I'm just making wiser. But before I come to my first question, I think that there are a few things I would like us to reflect on. One, I think we should always assume, one, the proficiency of the evaluation team of AIC and the decisions that we deal with. These are professionals. They went through a process, that's why they're there. No matter how hard you try, you can't be you. That's one. We do have responsibility, oversight responsibility over you. We should execute without any fee or favor. We continue doing that. But again, careful for the board. For the fiduciary responsibility of PIC. I'm saying that we should be very careful that we don't bear the lack of us performing the oversight function, especially to be the second board. We can't be the second board, no matter how much we try. Right? So you must understand our questions and inputs as people are trying to get more than try to say to you, we think that this blind board you must address. But to try to tend to be a second board here will eventually lose some space between what is the second board that mingles which as a board as an individual among you, among them the company of which puts some responsibility on the board as a whole and individual board members. And individual board members can be sued for their own personal capacity. So I can't handle the same thing because I can't. So I'm just saying that that becomes very important.
Yeah,
I think another thing, Chair, we should also be very careful not to cast aspersions on the professional workforce. For instance, that indicating that things are being hidden without providing any separate evidence creates a problem. I don't even need to do that. If there's information that we need to ask for that information, but to start saying people are hiding things, again, it does create a problem. I just thought I need to go over that. And I would like the PIC, just give me guarantee that there are proper checks and balances and policies in the organization to take care of some of the risks that we're talking about. I think for me, so that when things go wrong, I can just refer to that guy who gave us a guarantee and there are checks and balances. And yes, I agree when you say getting into business is just like me, but getting into business is an almost presupposed risk. Right? People who get into business, they are not risk averse, so to speak. So that also means that certain things can go wrong, but where they go wrong, one has an explanation as to why they went wrong, and so that we can say going forward, what is going forward into that trap again. Having said that, I think once my colleagues have said that it's very clear that come to this organization to cope and manage with a proper board, and the numbers don't lie, the patients of our workers are properly looked after. So there's no issue about that. But again, let's have some of the things. For example, one of the things that you said, Dr. Machina said, that you do appoint people to these companies where there are billions of your own, yes you do. But one question I would like to know, there's a money to the developmental imperative that you talk about. Having said, on some of those boards, you find that most of those boards are more important about the bottom line. The other thing is just an unnecessary education. Right? So, I just want what type of training that you do give to your board members. If you are not, I think the high time where they must go there for a particular mandate. People just don't go to those boards and present themselves, because sometimes they do that. They go there, the board members are very happy with the board fees, and they don't want to destabilize the system and so on. So once we have spoken about the profitability, the terms of whatever they are doing, when they are seeing transformation is setting in this company, people don't want to support that. Yet they are hitting your family. So my suggestion then is that there should be some training of the people that you appoint to those boards. So they should understand their money. The government goes better than the bottom line of those companies. They have a better mentality than PIC has. The money which you carry from your clients, as you said. I think that becomes very, very important. I think one of the things is the question of, I've seen that there are a lot of companies where you get in and rightly so, you protect the jobs and so on. And that seems to be made in big companies, right? I think we also need to look into these small companies to make sure that sometimes they just go under because they have fiscal problems or they need to pick up an investment, they 10 million there and so on and so forth. But for a company like an organization like PIC, which is billions, when trouble comes with a 10 million, again it becomes an emergency and so on. So they find some creative ways of taking care of those people. Directly, I would say, economists such as Gola, the economists such as care of small businesses. In my case, I would like to add that you also take care of the BE companies and the women empowered companies or women companies, because as it was the COVID from the yellow frame. So yeah. it's also very important that we do that. Yeah? And if I look at PSC, I think it may be a bit difficult. The transaction cost doing those types of things. Perhaps you need to work with other organizations to make sure that you do achieve that. And it's not such a damaging situation where you find a company going, well, just needed about a 20 million rand cash injection or in the securities and so on. But the company is checking millions of rents because we don't want them to fall in line. They shouldn't be allowed to fall down of them. Or we shouldn't create a moral hazard situation where people know that they are not allowed. It's too big to fail, right? But again, I think the bigger approach and strategic approach that we do to those companies, I think it's welcome. We should be well situation where we don't want to create more jobs. And hey, one thing that we need to appreciate, I think South Africa should give the South Africa donors to accept, is that government and institutions are responsible for the one, protection of jobs, and two, the creation of jobs. If you talk about an economy which is not yielding jobs, why that private sector is not yielding jobs? So I'm just saying that we would like to say to you, continue protecting those jobs, right? But I say it's also look at the small man at the corner there, because they also need by intervention. And I think I'm also saying that also the transaction cost of doing that from you may be pretty cheap. But find creative ways for say I come from Cape and you have got things like Italia, which are the ultimate, and it may have some strategic relationship and they deal with this, they know how to deal with smaller businesses and so on. And I'm sure you go to other colleges to find similar institutions. Yeah, so I think by and large that's what I wanted to say, and then again go back to where I said that I think Gerard King would like to support you, you can't give everything to everybody, but you represent everybody, will raise everything.
I think I'll forego my questions, because in some form or another, a lot of questions I wanted to ask were asked, and I also want to pick up on some of the issues after I hear you about how we go forward. The one question I did want to ask is, I see when I look more carefully, you are investing in a more developmental approach, more than I imagined you were. But those who are close to understanding the issue closer than I am, who are progressive and so on, keep raising this thing about the PIC and not enough to invest in developmental economy. Why do you think you are subjected to that persistent criticism? It comes, if you like, from left of center thinking. So I was dissociated to any institution that's linked to anything that said, yeah, necessarily. Obviously by BE you mean a variety of different things. Exactly what it means is even contested within the majority party of the government and parliament. But clearly you also want to tell us a bit more, maybe not now, about how much of the BE, it's important to have a black bourgeois, black industrial class, I mean, how else to de-racialize society. How to advance the national democratic revolution without having a black bourgeois as well. But finding the right balance between that, see the sort of thing that I think he said, as far as the teacher said, And it came to a point, funny, in a sense, it is true, it's understandable why this happens, but some of us are like completing your role, you know, like he said, you're not an SDI, but you are a PIC. And Makoto says that you are the biggest player in company, speaking of the country. So maybe we need some clarity about where your role begins and ends. In a more finite way than we had last time, which was 3 weeks ago. But also, some keen sense of how you balance out, let's say, the different classes and strata of beneficiaries that fall under the rubric of BE. Something that strikes me about what he is saying, I'm not saying it's your role, but this thing of investing, the small business development, say, in the counties, in the strata shops, you know, building an entrepreneurial culture amongst the lowest strata, and if you were an ousted by Pakistani, Somali, Bangladeshis, or whatever else, right? I mean, we don't see enough of that. I don't know what PIB's role is, but is there any role you think you have? In short, look at this up there. There are issues I have to raise because it's about the role of parliament, not being a second board, the right to have information, the right to have money. You know, kind of ground I raised last time. Frank, you know what? I'm going to come back to you. What is parliament's role? We have to be clear. Never mind who it is, what questions are going to change. It's a simple thing. What is Holland's role in respect of the unlisted area? What happens in other democracies in the world that deal with the equivalent of the PIC? But I'll come back to this, I raised it the last meeting. It's not all that huge ideological. The rules, the laws, the foundations are defined that, right? So let's leave those questions for now, but we'll have to tie them up later. So the other thing maybe I should say this now, colleagues. We've agreed in 2014. That because we have the NCDES in the second, third quarter, it's the fourth quarter, it's the fourth quarter. Because we have so much of legislation, because there's so many entities falling within us, we can't look at the annual reports of all these entities. So we're rotating, right? We do 3 each year. And I think this cluster should be our focus for this year's annual report, and then we move on to the outstanding ones. So we will have another opportunity, both in a written form, taking things forward, but also engaging with you again when we come back after the election. But how about as much ground as you can? I can allocate you 12 or 6 now. Can we get management of this? Oh, I forgot to read. Can we get management of the time clear? Can I suggest, in view of where we are, that we at least sit till about 20 past 1? Because none of these people not say anything. I mean, you can leave at 1, the meeting will continue to 20 past 1, right? You bring the point yourself. I've been the shortest, one of the shortest here, you know, so you ask so many questions. You must sit here and hear them out. You can't ask a million questions and then expect them to reply in 2 minutes. So you want to say something, is it? I think, no. Oh, just the me. I forgot you. Okay, I apologize. What's deliberate?
Mr. Chairman, I would never consider it deliberate, but I'm going to compete with you for the shortest. Mr. Chairman, I much of the things that you quite right. So I just want to ask 2 questions, but before I do, I just want to say thank you for the comprehensive report. There may well be shortcomings in it, but it's really comprehensive, and thank you very much for that. Just on the African Bank, on page 75, I see there's a page numbering issue between yourselves and us, but I think it's 75, 76 in your... can we entertain how much is in, you've given us the investment, how much is in the good bank and how much is in the bad bank? So you know, what is the proportion there? And what are the chances of recovering what's in the bad bank? And then the you've given us now the details of the correct names of companies and so on. But why did the annual reports get it wrong? Because what that does, it kind of gives one sense of insecurity about what else is wrong in this annual report if you can't even get the names of companies right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir. Sorry, just 2 technical comments that might be useful. The first is to say that some of the issues coming up here link to the work that we did for the committee on SOEs and non-commercial mandates. We explicitly excluded PFIs and other kinds of investment institutions because they're more complicated. But some of the issues mentioned in that PBO report on SOEs do relate to some of these questions. And just on that, for our purposes, one of the problems with non-commercial mandates is often quite hard to assess achievements of objectives on non-commercial mandates. And so if we were looking at employment and growth creation, it's hard, maybe even impossible, I think, if the current view in the advancing evaluation is to actually determine whether those kinds because even if you save a particular company that's paying 4,000 or 5,000 people, but if that company's gone under, another company might have been created that employs 7,000 people, so these economy-wide effects. So just from the perspective of ours, I think there's some difficult technical questions about non-commercial mandates, but we also cover that in the report to the Commission.
Thank you, Chair, Chair, just to add, I think the laws have been covered, and Chair, Sean has covered the effect that I think because the Philippines that he has pointed out in the face is relating to the economic growth and situation. I think there's quite a lot of entities, governments and non-governments that say they're in the fee, where they say they're contributing to the entity. The question I just comment on the remedy there is there a mechanism to coordinate these involvements to in a way to measure whether these contributions by different entities that is very intersectional from a conversation point of view, and also measuring whether that is achieved. Because TAC rightfully says they contribute to our economic growth and transformation, but are they really making impact? Or are they duplications of our entities? So is there some mechanism to coordinate such in a measurement of the picture?
Okay. So, excuse me, I
a reasonable request, certainly a good one. Thank you.
I think there was an issue of NDA, the confidentiality. The answer is both ways. You know, sometimes you hold very sensitive information which will share with our counterparty of the would like them to sign an NDA to protect our lives. And sometimes the other way around, they want to protect their IP and any other thing. So they ask us to sign an NDA. So that convention is both ways. And some are intentional. In our legal agreement, we can do translation that this is very important, that it shouldn't be out in the public domain. And at times, you know, we ask ourselves, why do people prefer to keep companies private? It's for a reason. I'm not sure about the GPS, if they are comfortable, but I'm convinced that they are comfortable with how we interact in terms of information that we give to them on a quarterly basis.
Thank you, Chair. I think as for the general indicators, I think confidentiality do matter. It does not mean that when people enter into confidential, it's necessarily something to hide something from people that told them to account. The thing that I just want to indicate is not the question, are we happy with the confidentiality that the KIC has? I can share that we have no issue with disclosing the names of entities we invest in. I don't think that the KIC was saying that, so we're not really talking to. We won't tell you who we're investing in. I think we're talking more about the terms and conditions. The question was a little bit, I think, stressed and maybe we tried to get the response, and it gave the impression that we tried to hide the names. There is no desire to hide the names, but it's, as Professor has indicated, I think there is a need to have the charity of certain terms and conditions that you enter with people, that's the nature of the business that we're dealing with. That's to take, so we have no issue with disclosing names, because there's no real reason why we should hide that whatsoever. But I think the challenge also is we do talk about thousands and thousands of investments, so the thing has to be long, but I think one should see that there's no need to hide that. In terms of conditions, definitely there are issues of confidentiality. The relationship between the FS and the GPS, that although the PIC and the GPS and the GPAR are very, very close, the PIC is an asset manager, invests like any other asset manager. Sometimes we tend to treat it as if different. It's all by government, that is very true, but if you're an asset manager, it has to be treated by us in the same way that we would treat any other asset manager and respect the relationship between us and them. And that's how we at all times work with the PIC, and the PIC also invests in other entities where they have to respect the same kind of terms and conditions we would respect with any other entity that we actually have a relationship with. Same thing with that. So I think that the Honourable Commissioner is not going to agree that we want him to protect information that should be filed its nature in the public domain, and that we more than happy to disclose.
Secondly, you are a very, very important institution.
you have to do public sector workers. And because it's so important, obviously it is important for Parliament to exercise effective oversight. But the question that arises, who do you answer to? For Christian is the last time, remember? Primarily. To your members and against Parliament. What are the respective and distinct roles that both the members and Parliament have? Then in respect of unlisted, we said the last time, whatever the committee members ask you for, you have to provide. However, there may be documents that you're not obliged to provide, and then it's just a legal argument for why you can't provide those documents, and then we will refer it to Frank Jenkins. He will look at it and see whether the legal case you're presenting for not making available documents is a valid one. If it's not, then we're going to ask you for those documents, but right? We are bound by Parliament's rules, norms, and conventions. Now, what I'm suggesting also is there are some market sensitivities, presumably. Even though it may not be illegal for Parliament to ask that information, by leaving that information, it impacts on the markets and it impacts on your, other companies you're working on and so on. If that's the case, then say there's nothing illegal about grabbing it or giving it to you, but these are market sensitivities, and explain that, and then you refer it to Frank and Parliament's budget office. There is another option, which is if there are certain sensitivities, we can confer with Frank and the legal unit here and have a close meeting where the answers can be given, which might otherwise not be possible to give in an open domain. So I think bearing those things in mind and the clarity, we will meet you again at some stage. I don't think we're going to answer all these questions, but I think we should take this as far as we can for now. So I think people should also be clear. We are not associated with some individual here and whatever they intend. It's about Parliament and Parliament's role. It's not a big deal. It's a matter of three points. It's for Parliament to tell us what is our role, the legal advisor. What question?
I thought, let me just remind members that number one, GDPR says see. That's one structure that oversees whether PIC is doing the right, if they are making the right decisions in terms of their investment strategy. Two, they also have the minister, deputy minister, who is the chair of the PIC, who also has to ensure that the money of workers, not the money of government, let's leave that here, this is money of workers. And they also, he's also there to make sure that that thing does happen. It happens according to the IC itself as a board. That also needs to make sure that the PIC executives are investing money correctly. So whatever we want to say, let's be conscious of that, of those facts. Because it looks like we want to treat the PIC as if it's some structure that, whatever. I mean, it's money, this one, and who knows, who cares, you must not involve the Zulu in me. And you must have an existing baby. They are in danger because there are two Zulus here and they are not in this place.
Chair, I would have not wanted to speak after you actually when you leave the summer. That's why I decided to raise my hands beforehand. Can I take it back? The question was, in a way, this construed what is meant as implications. And I want to ask to avoid the situation where we are not in hand as a committee in terms of approach or what we are trying to say. And I'm going to make suggestions related to what you said. First, there will have to be some form.
of basis if the PIC does not disclose information. It's part of a basic legal requirement. To say I can't disclose, there will be a basis that we have to provide why you cannot. But also, they should be, actually that also should be taken into account the truth. It's not always innocent when we as members press information that we just want to know. Sometimes there's political reasons behind and how we might use that information. So it's not that we are not going to take that into account. So it's important to understand first there should be a basis not to disclose, and if there isn't adequate legally, then they should be disclosed. But two, let's also look at the options as to why do we need this information. So that we use it in a manner that will assist the work that we do. And not just solve it in our beautiful bookcases and not use it in terms of holding the PIC account transcript. So the suggestion would be that let's avail that information. Because I take it for granted for now, in my own opinion, there is no sufficient legal basis not to. So that we dispel also the notion that we protect information as so far as it deals with certain issues. And then we take it from there. And I will make it based on what you said. You know, today we're into efforts. My most uncomfortable room in all the rooms in Calgary. So,
why are you not sitting on your right chest? Precisely because of that. This is not a room. And you will attack your own
head. It is what? It is. So, I think I'm 46.
I think I'm going to speak all three of me.
So, I think my work is very difficult to the issue that we deal with, it might have been made by others, but it's there. And we find space to, at one point, to relate to it. But I think the last request, this aggressive environment doesn't affect anybody. And if personal occasion is in life, they just want us to take him on. You see, when somebody responds to a question, you listen to them. They say what they say, you differ with them such time. But you allow them the opportunity to respond to you. So I think there was a misconception in terms of what they say. So it's not the terms and conditions of the contract that's signed with companies, but it's the names, the listed names that can just be available, then you take it from there.
I think we should end this debate. Whatever Parliament is entitled to, it must be entitled.
Yeah,
that's all. It's simple. I'm not going to party the first. Otherwise, that must change its rules, eh? That must change the PFMA and all that. For now, I have no choice. Literally, I have changed. Right? Let's move on. But I want to plead again to members, right? Particularly, look, there's nothing to hide. I have informed the committee, I've spoken to David 3 times. Right? Don't let him be in Switzerland. He won't change. Yeah. Do what you want to do. Within the rules. But I'm not finished here again. Mr. Mania, that's what I call it, Mr. Mania. There's nothing crucial. And let me make something painstakingly clear. It has nothing to do with us being denied and scared of promotion. Where am I going to go? But deputy president is the next thing. I'm not interested in that. I'd rather write a book. Okay. This is writing novel. So where am I? Do I want money? I give none of my talent away. I like to listen. So what's that ambition lie? What am I scared of? Right? So basically, this constant insult to the chair in particular about, you know, I'm scared, and it's ridiculous stuff. I just saying, you know, I'm a ninny. I mean, you know, look at my record. Right? So this thing of us exercising rigorous and vigorous oversight is in the interest of the majority party, first and foremost, now more than ever before. Right? So this idea that, you know, we're all like, what, leftovers or something, you know, of the existence. I mean, with due respect to the Deputy Minister, we are from the same generation, right? Yeah, you are not Nelson Mandela, you can't have... So this is the thing. It's no use talking to this, right? And I'm going to plead with the opposition party, right? Because I've said, nothing wrong in exercising vigorous oversight. We do it ourselves, all of us, from all the parties, right? But if the way it is done consistently and persistently, yes, the ritual overtones, the contempt, the disdain, not contempt for others, you know, feeling that people are inherently corrupt and dishonest, I get that experience myself. I explained to the guy nicely what happened at the end. We all laugh. So basically, don't come today and tomorrow, fucking speak to David again. I ain't going to do it. But David, on the other hand, you must behave by the norms and rules and conventions of this. You're not superior to anybody else. You have full rights to see all your questions to God. Nothing was more studied and look at it. Just forward it to you immediately. So his questions are there. But now we've got a run out of time. Now what I'm suggesting is, can you answer the questions you can? And can you get to the GPA? This is unfortunate, right? It's regrettable. There's 2 years that I've been chair, and probably July, 11 years I've chair. This very rarely happens. In fact, on the only occasion, we won't be able to take you. But we find another opportunity. But can you try to answer the questions? Specifically, precisely, and then we'll see how we follow up. Now, hopefully, because Antonio is not here, Tumasani and Sean have put stuff together. And we will do a follow up in some form or the other. But we will get legal advice we need from Brian Jenkins. And we'll consult with the ETI, where companies act, impact, and so on. Yeah. Okay. He will do us a paper before we meet you again. Thank you.
Chairman, the independent news media was owned by the Irish. And throughout the ownership, they've not invested any capital. Very little. And a lot of money was going out in the form of dividends. When we got in charge, we saw an opportunity to buy it back and make it South African home and transform it. With that, after transformation, we said we were expecting government contracts, which never happened. But the model didn't rely on government subscription. The key focus was on digitalizing the company. And this is what we are doing at the moment. This is what the company is doing at the moment. If you recall the story of Naspers, Naspers today is the biggest company of the JSC, where it started. 2001, those days, it used to be known for paying cash. If you go Google it and look at the history, you will see, you know, the history of Nasdaq, where it started, how he was building, they were building the digital platform and so on, and buying other newspapers, etc., to what they are today. I think it's only fair that we should give blacks also a chance to create a Nasdaq.
Thank you for saying that.
And the strategy is working now. We've just reported that the numbers are looking good, beating the base case. I think we just need some patience here. In the 11, 2 years into this investment or so. So if we can just give us a chance to put it together, maybe we'll come up with another business space later on. Every energy, the same story. What were we looking for? We wanted exposure to upstream. There was, as far as we know, there was little exposure from any South African company to upstream, where they own oil fields and so on. And this was an opportunity to do so. We did due diligence, we were there, we've seen the oil fields and so on. What was required of capital to drill the well so that we can extract the oil? But unfortunately, the oil price fell. And nobody had predicted that the oil price was going to fall in the United States. That's why the company is in a bit of a trouble. But we are not pushing it. So the oil price needs to be taking back. And most importantly, we're in the process of increasing additional production so that at some point we are able to make money. This was a good idea in my view, because it gave South Africa for the first time exposure to upstream company over tax.
Public domain yesterday. That's why I saw the article that they had said. It mentions the big domain. That's why I saw it yesterday.
So the answer is, we believe it was correct that the idea was correct. But the economic changes, unfortunately, affected the idea this morning. But I think it can be fixed for now. I think the honorable member from Limpopo City. I understand the question. And we have a plan. We have a plan. But my colleague, Roy Raja, can just give you a flavor of what we're doing. For the members of the GPN, we are creating products so that they can also enjoy their money before they retire. Question on the impact of 9/12. I assume that we are looking at that time tables, the 2 days, if I can put it that way. The GDF, the impact was almost 95 billion in 2 days. UIF about 7. Condensation about 3 billion. They've got two funds. One is a pension fund, the other one is just cash. The pension fund was almost about 1.2 billion. This is the impact on the biggest lines of the GP, of the PIC, for the 2 days. Thank you very much. Yeah. Beyond 2 days, we can recover. It's very important to say that we've recovered quite quickly. Yes. I think you should have said the money, the amount you speak of, we're lost in a 20-hour period, but they were fully recovered.
Significant recovery over time. Yes.
All right, if anybody has evidence to the contrary, they can bring it to the committee, but for now it's fine. Can we move on, please?
I think there was a question on the payment for feasibility studies and project management. At the moment, the way the IC operates, we get a mandate from our clients and then they tell us how to spend their money, So there are certain developmental finance institutions whose mandate is to do feasibility and project development, you know, both IST, DSA, IDC, seizing that space with the help of DTR. I think those are some of the discussions that we need to have there. Okay. Agriculture, there's a wider strategy. I think we've mentioned, you know, and the Deputy Minister has announced that we now have capital to invest to grow the economy and stimulate jobs, and agriculture is one of those in our plans to involve that. The issue of spanner shocks and so on, we'll look at it in the context of SME, again, as part of the developmental in the strategy that we have, we will support SME a part and parcel of the broader strategy. There was an issue on SAP Miller. There is a deal on the table, I think it's with the competition authorities. So as soon as they approve, then AP Inver of Persia will take over SAP Miller. But in the transaction, we actually insisted that AP Inver should be listed on the JSC as well. So simultaneously with that, they will then be AP Inver, which will give a South African exposure to even a bigger entity on the stock exchange. I think there was a question around the transformation and NPV of liability stream of the GPF. I think those are some of the things that we need to look at and get to spot once we have the right answers. And the benchmarking, I think honorable members have all contributed around what is an appropriate peer benchmark for the PIC. They said we do globally. I did read out the document on how we compare with the local funds as well, and we can make that information available. So we measure it on the
exclusivity. I also was struck by this, that you need some comparisons to the country. And something global is no problem. It's not from the supplement of the Zara.
The issue of African bank, good bank and the bad bank, and I ask my colleague Fidelis to assist with that, if you have the numbers.
Yeah, on the next book in the bad bank, my understanding is that currently it's about 5 billion. And as you know, the PIC and itself, which recapitalizes the good bank. And the net book in the good bank is just over 20 billion. Can I also take sort of the liberty to answer the question on the DE managers? For the external funds, we have about 139 billion being managed by external managers. And there are 21 managers in all, of which 14 of them are DE managers. The DE managers are classified into the established DE managers, and among those we've got you know, the likes of Mali and so on. Those established DE managers manage 51 billion rand of our funds. And then we've got the developmental managers who are still, some of them are still under incubation, and they manage 5 billion of our funds. So in total, you could say that the DE managers manage 41% of what we've outsourced. And that number is growing. We have just issued a new RFP looking for new managers, particularly women and the disabled. So that process is underway, and we'll see how many people apply.
Sorry, Mr. James, let me verify something. The last question about the African Bank. If I look at page 35, my understanding is that we have no investment at all in the bank. That covers the issue that you were in total. I just want to clarify, PRC only invested in a good book, 2.5 billion. Nothing in the bank, or is there something in the bank book as well?
Sorry, let me just clarify. I was talking about the net book, but PIC's investment
good bank. We have nothing in this bad bank.
I just wanted to verify on the independent newspapers I've invested in, I asked about the current loan amount broken down into capital and interest and when that loan becomes payable. I just want to be clear. And then I just want to be clear on the Eren Energy investment. Did I understand you correctly or incorrectly to suggest that part of the corrective action is to make available further investments? Is that correct? In other words, you'll be investing more money in Eren Energy.
Chair, I think it lets the. I just wanted to clarify the issue around ASCO, because good thing and the bad thing. I'm not so sure if I'm following you, if you're saying the PIC is only on the side of the good bank and not necessarily exposed to the bad bank. How is that possible? If you could clarify that, because I'm not sure if I'm following you.
Okay. Maybe how I have to do the restructuring. When they put the restructuring, so they broke down the books between two, which is the good bank and the bank book. So what happened in the fall, they're sitting in their bed, the bad bank. And the good bank was actually a new entity, of which the PLC, together with the other consortium members, which are the banks of South Africa, subscribed to be inside the good bank together with fall. And that's why we try today to say we don't have shareholding in the bad bank. We have it in the good bank. But I think what I've heard my colleagues alluding to say, indirectly, we had a shareholding when the initial bank was going down. So you could say that we have value that, as much as shareholder might never materialize the value, there was a value that attributed to the shareholder in African bank before the event.
Okay. Chairperson, I find it very difficult to say what is the next step in our investment strategy, because we're dealing with a listed stock. Whatever we say can be market sensitive. We prefer not to say what we're going to do next.
Yeah.
There's a board that will guide us as to what are the next steps.
But at the same time, there are things in the public domain that are there, and members are entitled to from any part of the draw. So we have to explain flexibility as well about assets that you have, which you have to exercise, effective responsibility.
Chairperson, there was an issue of food security. I think we discovered under our program, agricultural strategy, the definitions.
I'm not sure if we'd like to know more. Can you just signal that and pick up on this in the next exchange here?
Okay. And there was a question around guarantee that there are checks and balances between the PIC, in other words, the prudent investment process as well as the regulatory oversight. We are audited by the AG and we are also regulated by the Financial Services Board. We report to Treasury and we report to our clients on a regular basis. And we have reports that deals with the internal data. It's strong enough, and it's from a strong investment strategy as well. So we believe there are enough checks and balances to ensure that we do an appropriate job when we invest on behalf of our clients. There were other questions. I think it's around the director, our director's training, that we ensure that they are aligned to our socio-economic transformation and translating our investing companies. That is something that we are planning to work on to provide proper training. Our directors, they will get annual training and we're serving investment companies, investing companies to do the same. But only specifically on ESG, we still have to support in developing a comprehensive training program so that they are able to drive ESG and most importantly issues of social economic transformation within the ESG companies. We thank the honourable member for that. I think securing jobs in small and medium enterprises, I think, is very important. And the honourable member, you know, was questioning the fact that we are looking, we are concentrating too much on large caps and large companies. We still have an SME fund, as I said, as part of our strategy to address job losses and job retention and creation in the small and medium enterprise sector as well. In fact, there's a bigger plan out there with the led by the minister at the moment with business where a fund is concentrated, but I'm sure that will be made public at an appropriate time. But there's a big effort to try to stimulate the small and medium enterprises in the country.
Around the MVPs and the fact that they are subjected to the IP internal rating process. So I wanted to know, like, maybe give us a 5 bullet points to probably look at, because I think it is of interest to us to know what sort of areas of risk or emphasis of risk basically in terms of your unlisted entities.
We'll deal with the issue of a loan to INSA as well as the credit internal credit rating system. That's good.
Thank you again. I think as it relates to the last question on INSA, the loan is actually due for five years, and you know, the way we actually structure those type of loans is that we give the company 2 years to actually pay us back. You also have to go through a typical process, either you raise another loan to replace your CFA, or it's a bank sale to invite another investor, or you list the business. So depending on what it looks like, depending on what it looks like in year five, on the basis of the base case, we decide as a board of that company how we actually behave as business. And so, just to be very clear, the loan is 5 years, it has a 2 year run, still left with 3 years. At the moment, it accrues interest, as you see it, in terms of the capitalization of that interest. And that basically forms part of the terms of that particular loan. I think to answer the question in terms of how we look at the credit risk management process, I think it's important to highlight that we don't run the credit risk management protocol for a bank where it's where the loans are just locked together and decisions are actually based on the way the portfolio looks like. We look at a lot more than that, which is very similar to any other private investor who have actually a loan that's already. So we do have a tool that we bought from Moody's. It's called Credit Result. It's a very popular system which actually gives you a share of rating. It gives you a critical rating, AA, double B, whether it's investment grade or not, which you actually attach to that. We use that as a proxy to actually price the type of risks that we take. But we go beyond further than that because there's certain limitations of what we do because it takes into consideration the revenues, the income, expenses, and what balance sheet actually looks like. So I arrive at that. So that's a quantitative part of the tool. Thereafter, we actually go through a typical fundamental analysis of that business. And in the fundamental analysis, we take into say that we have to develop investment thesis for a transaction. Can the business into the future actually deliver on that investment thesis? So, typical reports that you see from the brokers in the market, that's what the fundamental analysis really looks like. And that's part of our typical credit risk process. We highlight the type of risk the business is exposed to, that we get out of our due diligence process. So, further than that, we look at the governance of the business. Can the governance as it stands, actually deliver on the things that we want to do. And so we structure the business in such a way that the governance can actually deliver. Obviously, we borrow from King, and we apply that to the best of where the business is going and the things that we actually want to achieve. So those some of the typical things that we look at in the credit assessment and sorts of the CIC as a resolution under the discussion.
Chair, I have to belay the point that this is now the first time that I'm going to ask the question, and the question is, what is the loan amount in respect to the two loans? What is the loan amount outstanding? Presumably, it's somewhere in the region, at least if you look at the debt, and of course, one of the loans must be very close to a billion. The question is, what is the other loan amount?
I think, Chairman, we are about to finish our independent evaluations very soon on the unlisted proposal. We'll provide you with the latest on that as soon as that is done. But at the same time, the activity is really coming down where we are now, so the very first.
We don't have it here, but it's just the data.
All right,
we'll be
not Alan and the two PBO people are looking, and we'll call that to Facebook.
No, sir. I think the college got that question around your quality internal relationship. They wanted to understand whether AFID was actually subjected to that process. Because from what we have, what we hear, what we read, it doesn't appear that your decision then was actually subjected to the process you just outlined now. Unless I'm wrong with it, correct me. Or whether it says something. I'm talking about AFID. You remember? Yeah.
I think, Chair, we... This was a listed chair, by the way. We have the equity, mainly, of the African Bank Limited. Equity is public. And this is the investment process that we run through, and so on and so forth. But what we must remember is that this session we depend largely on public information and reports that are released by the JSC and so on. Because the principle is that all investors and shareholders must get the same information at the same time and so on. So we use that kind of information to broker and so on and so forth. Now in this instance, I'm sure the MIBE report said the TM will come out now because there is that investigation already. But what we saw is that already there's something around the board, you know. But I don't know how to say what it is until the report is out. We rely heavily on the governance, in other words, the board on the other side, to protect shareholders' interest. So I think in this instance there was a little bit of information asymmetry. So yeah, I think once the report is out, we can exactly what happened.
Tandy is very sharp. She looks concerned that you're not responding to a question about bonds and so on. So he's a little bit fierce on this regard.
Shall I say the bonds for investors out there generally, I think they are available. National Treasury has got what are known as written bonds. And they run from, I think, 12 months to 3 years. With a very good yield that we can buy from Treasury and other outlets that they have identified or authorized to sell. So they are available, definitely, the retail bonds for the retail industry. Chairperson, my note tells me that we've covered most of the questions. Yes.
What we need to do is that just I'll cover the ground very quickly. The three of you are going to get together and do the issues, and then you're going to do the legal and I'll look at the main concern being what is it that they decided to keep away from the public domain, and if so, can we start that in the first meeting? In particular, look at the unlisted section. So they're going to start the same thing. They're not, they're not. It's a straightforward matter. It's not for me to decide. So lawyers work out what the rules can be. Change the rules. I also want to say, look, dependence to you. Mr. Lee raised last time frustrations in his constituency was coming in 8 to 12 cases, right? Of the GBA not acting on people who are entitled to the benefits and so on. But some of you last years have also had problems. Now I've actually seen some contingency maybe as well, and you were really good. What I want to say is, independent. to finish earlier. Mr. Lisa, and then anybody else was.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I indeed had an email I wished to share because it's rather nice, but you're right, it wasn't as high the number, I think, was 6, which doesn't really matter. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. And I did send the truth to Cindy, thank you. And I got an email about 2 hours ago confirming that one of those issues has been happily resolved. So that's something rather nice. So thank you very much for that. And so I hope the others do get resolved. And Simon, I think the fundamental issue here is not so much about individual cases as much as it was about there being no ombuds agreed persons or whatever term you want to use can approach in terms of the GPF, and that process were being now to be established. That's the primary thing, but in the interim, the GPA...
We all agree.
In the interim, the GPAA needed to up their game in order that you and I and many others, I suppose, don't get these issues brought to our attention and load Cindy and Treasury and all the rest of it. So that's as much as I can say about it, Mr. Chairman.
Before my question, I didn't hear Mr. Lee. For responding to his question.
Mr. Chairman, it was the DA who raised the issue.
Chair, no, a quick one. I wanted to get maybe a quick feedback on how far a GPF has gone. Last time we had advised them that we're concerned that education of their own members does not appear to be as effective, especially when it comes to them resigning because of these retirement reforms. They're not necessarily affecting them, but they appear to think that it's going to affect them. We just wanted to get a quick feedback about what is happening in that on the front.
Can you not remember what you raised, Mr. Topper? Especially the GPAA.
Yeah. It might also the next time it comes, but if it's somehow on his presentation page, there's a function investment administration. So I think that that entails considering that the mandate with PRC from directly from the pension fund or whatever it says, wasn't it? But then on his cost analysis, he says there's a threat, a restricted mandate. What do they mean by restricted mandate? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, anybody else? Good, everything for now. You can add anything you want also. Okay, we've got about 8 minutes
or
more if you want
10 minutes.
Yeah,
thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, can I just quickly introduce the team? Behind me is Mr. Jay Muller, the general manager of the program 2.2, which deals with EPF. Sitting next to me is Ms. Kitty Bumu, Marie, the general manager of customer relationship management. And at the back is Mr. Mungezi Mkabisa, who deals with the treasury program 7 as well. Mr. Chairman, there were a number of issues raised there. Maybe I should just take the last one first. We have carried out a SWOT analysis in terms of our entity, in terms of giving ourselves direction going forward. When we speak about a restricted mandate, it means that we're operating in a space in the country in which we're not able to, at this moment in time, effectively offer the products and services that many of our private sector entities can. For example, one of them is to provide financial advice. It's something we are dealing with the fund, and going forward we'll have to find more applicable solutions. Now, in order to provide financial advice, we have to be registered as a financial services provider. Our individuals also have to be trained, etc. So, when intermediaries go out there and potentially advise a 59-year-old member with 20 years service to cash in their benefits, that member is prejudiced on a number of levels, including having to pay additional tax, including losing their post-retirement medical aid subsidy, and potentially not getting attention from the private sector that they could potentially get from the GEPF pension. So we can educate members, but there are certain walls that in which we are restricted. We are also working with GEPF in terms of products and services that we need to offer going forward, including a preservation fund, so that when our members leave a fund, they have some avenue in which to preserve. reserve the monies, or in addition to that, if they do want to increase their level of savings, if, for example, they check the net replacement ratio as being inadequate, possibly because they started saving too late in their lifetime. So we are looking at those products and services. So when we say that one of our shortcomings at the moment is that we have a restricted mandate, it is precisely for that reason. Chair, we have noted the trend of the resignations. We believe the worst is over. If we look at the statistics provided in the report over the last 5 months at least, we find that year on year, if we compare month on month, there has been a decrease effectively in the number of resignations. If we went March year on year, February year on year, December year on year, but we do recognize that there may have been some information in the public domain that may have triggered some of these additional resignations. Okay, another very, very important point that members did ask was about our education initiatives. Of course, we work hand in glove with the fund. I will ask my colleague, Kedloni, just to elaborate on that and give us more information. And as vulnerable members did correctly point out, education of our members is critical because we do want to keep them in the fund. The fund does provide incredibly good benefits, and this is not a short-term savings vehicle. We're not our members cashing in the benefits and then coming back into the fund and starting all over again. So our number one priority is actually to help members preserve their monies and achieve a suitable net replacement ratio when they retire. And I'll invite my colleague just to elaborate on some of the education initiatives that we have in place.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, we've just invigorated the education effectiveness campaign, of which part of it includes the increase in ratios. If we look at the year-on-year increases, over the previous years, we had agreed with the fund that we have bi-monthly initiatives, and we agreed this year to increase the ratios to one ratio per month. And how we look at that, we look at invigorating and going to places where we cannot be reached. We focus on rural areas. We focus on townships and where there is a need for those. So on a monthly basis, we have that. We've also increased the pre-retirement campaigns for our members that are about to retire. We recruit them and then we give them education. And that's why we believe that the resignations are somehow coming to a reduction because of the education that we provide to our members. We've also embarked on the media presence, so we negotiate with radio stations, the national and regional radio stations and television to just increase our presence in further educating the members. We also do that by doing newsletters and creating frequently answered questions through various channels that we've had. And when we look at the increase in the mobile offices, our mobiles, we've also integrated the campaign, so we are looking deeper into reaching areas that cannot necessarily come to the region and central offices, and also an increase in the number of supply offices that are available that serve as part of education. So we believe that the interventions are yielding the desired results.
Anything else? No? In that case, before I look to a close, perhaps I should alert the committee to the fact that apart from the chair, the best attendance at the committee cannot be is Linda Enson. And can we please have her back? We're missing her. She's here on time and she leaves after 1 o'clock if she has to. And apart from the chair, attendance has been excellent. Can we in a committee? The only thing we agreed on in this committee, including Mr. Mania, will agree for one. It's startling, right? It's probably Mr. Mania agrees for one. Linda Enson is an excellent member of this committee. And she should be promoted and given a performance bonus. Okay?
There's a point that I want to correct here on the question around, yes, just one, it's just a number, on how much how much impact the 9-12 has on our portfolios. The correct number is 99 billion in total. Yeah, and GPF accounts for almost 40 billion.
Can I thank you, Daniel Metzler, and your team, and the GK and the GUPF, and we'll take things forward. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.